It's our... It's
game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. A huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Verbal Network.
Well, this is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I have returned once again on the interview bus, and I have managed to finally get Mr. T.S. Now, is it Lucart? Is it Leekart? Lucart. Okay.
It is Lucart. That eye is just there to trip people up.
Yes, it does. It does. I'd rather have you butcher it than me. So you know. But some people might not readily recognize your name, but you've got a list of stuff under your belt, including Skull and Bones, most stuff from Green Ronin Publishing, but Skull and Bones, the Old World Bestiary, and of course you worked on some Mutants and Masterminds, Nocturnals stuff, and some various other stuff out there.
Outside of Green Ronin, the most famous is unquestionably Dark Heresy. So.
Yes. Excellent. And that's the Dark Heresy from Fantasy Flight. Yes.
It was Black Industries. These days it's Fantasy.
Yeah, see, that's why I had to think about it for a second, going, wait, it was...
Yeah, that was quite a saga.
Well, let's go ahead and what I tend to ask everybody is what got you into gaming? What got you into the hobby in general? Not the industry, but the hobby. What got you rolling the dice?
Well, when I was when I was 6 years old, I went with my parents to my cousins in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and my cousin Mark was 14 at the time. And he was corresponding and playing with this group of guys and that he'd go and he'd see regularly. And I had no idea, but actually some of the guys that Mark knew, among others, he drove up and met Gary Gygax very early on. He knew that whole group of the original guys from Geneva. And he asked my parents, he went down, and my mom remembers this really, really distinctly. He went down and he said, I have this game that I want to show Todd, and it's really neat. But you got to know that it might mess with his life. And they kind of looked at each other, and they're like, okay, Mark. And he took me up into his attic, and there was, I remember it crystal clear, there was these rays of light coming through the attic, and they were falling on this small little table that had this cluster of gems on it. As they got closer, I saw that the gems were like these completely bizarre dice.
Nice.
And I'd never seen anything like it before, and you know, he goes, this game is about, you know, imagination and fantasy, and I'm like, okay. I sat down and I played D&D for the first time from straight from the boxes, actually. Not even the red box, but straight from the original books. And I have been hooked for going on 34 years since.
Very nice, very nice. Now the so that's what got you into the actual gaming. What's your story about getting actually into the industry and doing writing and design? And you're a you're a freelancer.
The industry, yes, the industry such as it is. Yeah, I am a freelancer. I went. There was a Gareth Skarka, and we'll come back to that because that's interesting. But Gareth Michael Skarka did a big experiment 11 years ago now. He designed his game Underworld in public.
Oh, yeah?
He did a series of, like podcasts, but way before podcasts.
Right.
He did a column where he put it together week by week. And for whatever reason, what Gareth was working on really resonated with me, and I've been doing like local articles and some gaming stuff that I just put up for free on the web at the time. Nothing too thick. One of the funny things, I busted out then. It's since been translated into like a dozen languages. People still contact me about it. I did a bunch of upgrades for 7C. I did all this stuff for like Brutes and 7C. It's just for fun. And these Japanese guys contacted me last year, and can we translate this into kanji? I'm like, sure. I did it a decade ago now. Yeah, it's funny. But anyway, I did this free stuff. Well, I sent him this thing I just wrote, and he was like, boy, this is great. Can I use this? And I said, sure. And we started corresponding. And after three or four correspondences, he's like, oh, man, at this point, you're a named author in this book. I need to bring you in because I'm using too much of your stuff. So I ended up writing chunks of Underworld, and that's actually one of my first credits. But in the order of how things came out, it actually came out later than some other stuff that I worked on.
Right.
But that year, I went to Gen Con, and I met Gareth, and I ended up meeting a lot of people. And actually, he's such a great guy. I met Matt Forbeck before he knew who I was, or, you know, I was just kind of nervous and I hadn't met any of these people. And he's like, oh, come to my party. It's also my birthday party. I love Gen Con. And then I was introduced to a lot of people that I was just like freaking out that first time because they're all people that I was like, he worshipped for years, and I was actually meeting them in the flesh. So it was a good experience, and that's how I got into the industry, as it were.
Nice, nice. We've had Matt Forbeck on the show before, actually, and I know Matt. I actually know Gareth. Gareth's out in Lawrence, Kansas, which is probably about 30 minutes away from me.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Gareth and I have a huge project that we're getting ready to unleash on everyone.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. I do know I've been talking to him about coming out to CantCon, our game convention that we run. So definitely want more Gareth in the Gareth at CantCon and whatnot. So Gareth's an interesting guy.
He's one of my favorite people, though. Hey, you know, there's always been a lot of stuff about, stuff goes round and round about GMS. And
sure.
I love him to pieces, but I guess it comes down to, Gareth's one of those people. Gareth, you see, some people don't suffer fools lightly. Gareth won't suffer fools at all.
That sounds about right.
And he's pretty clear about it. So sometimes he rubs people the wrong way.
That was the early stuff you worked on, was with the Underworld. Now, was that when he was doing Event Horizon at that point, or was it still?
Well, early on, yeah, that was when he was with the Jaffe brothers, I ended up writing big chunks of The Last Exodus with the Jaffes. But when he was doing that, he was working on that, and a couple other projects came up. But what really, I guess you could say, got me going, kind of led to a string of working with a lot of really good people, was Gareth had this idea to do a pirate game. And at the time, in the D20, it was the very early expression. 3.0 was out. Everybody was excited. And there wasn't really a pirate game out. So we started working on it, and there's a whole odyssey involved there that there's literally like four or five pirate games that all came zipping out.
Yeah.
You know? So what seemed like a good idea ended up taking a while. Timing is a funny thing in the gaming industry, like anything else. We ended up doing it, Gareth and me and Ian Stark, who's done a lot of cool stuff. Ian's biggest thing is probably Conan for Mongoose. And the group of us together with Laura Hansen, she's Laura Skarka these days, or is it Hansen Skarka? I don't know if she's got a hyphenate or not. But we did Skull and Bones.
Right.
And we originally it was going to be a standalone game, and as time went by, it seemed like getting in on the D&D bandwagon was a good idea, and eventually it got delayed enough that we ended up doing it modified 3.5.
Right.
Well, it's funny how that worked out, because we did it modified 3.5, we sold it lock, stock, and barrel to Green Ronin.
Mm-hmm.
Green Ronin busted it out within a month of the release of the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right, I remember when it came out.
Right, so not only did it come out, everybody was, you know, I need a game with pirates and, you know, kind of some magic. And they were like, well, look at this. It's pirates and voodoo. You know?
Exactly.
So timing ended up being extraordinary, and it got all kinds of lauds and honorable mention for the Ennies, and generally a lot of people still cite it as one of their favorites from that era. So.
Yes, I've culled quite a bit of my 3.5 stuff, my third ed and 3.5 stuff, and I am happy to say I do still have Skull and Bones on there. In fact, I have most of the Mythic Vista stuff.
A number of people have told me they only gave up their Skull and Bones copy because they now have a PDF of it. Like, only were willing to give up the play because they had the PDF.
Well, I think I have a PDF, but I'm holding on to the pulp copy, you know, just because old timer in me, you know, it's like grumble, grumble, grumble,
yep,
off my lawn.
Yeah, I always like to flip here.
Let's see. Let's sort of go down the list real quick here. You've worked on some of the obviously that was the Last Exodus, then Skull and Bones, then you did
a lot of the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay,
yes,
Second Edition line. Yeah, core book. I was the lead design on Old World Bestiary, and that's probably one of my proudest books. That people still sing that one's praises. That was a good book to write.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of miscellaneous stuff that I did for different people in that era. I designed and wrote a good chunk of Terror and Talibheim. I did like the adventure for it. And that one, a fair number of people say it was the best of the published adventures for the second edition, of the new published adventures for the second edition.
Right.
People go back and forth because people are always telling me, oh, it should have been like, they should have given you 15,000 more words, and you just could have made it a big epic campaign. it's always nice to hear people really like that one. So
right,
that was a good. And then from that, I did a bunch of different indie stuff for different people. My friend Jason O'Blair and I did Word is Bond. I wrote some for that, and a couple other things came along there that miscellaneous stuff. But the real big thing that then happened is, having worked on the Wolfrup stuff, I got tapped quietly to start foundation work for Dark Heresy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was obviously huge to finally have a 40K RPG. So I did literally 2 years of work before any of you guys were even publicly told that there was a 40K RPG.
Right.
Remember it being
announced and coming out, and then Black Industries stopped doing RPG stuff.
Well, that's a funny thing. there's a lot of water under that bridge. But the fast version is, it came out and entirely sold through its print run in 3 days, plus all the initial pre-orders.
Right.
And yet they pink slipped everybody involved with it and some of the others and said, "Bye, guys." And it all went blank there for a month plus, and then they announced that they transferred it over to FFG.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that whole thing was interesting. But I'm glad that the guys at FFG have taken it up. Ross Watson's a buddy of mine, the lead guy over there. And I talk to Ross a lot about the different lines that they've come out. Rogue Trader and Death Watch just coming out here. So Death Watch just saw wide release this week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was at Gen Con, but it just got a big roll out, and from what I've heard, everybody's liking it, so it's pretty cool.
Very cool. I've never actually played the Warhammer FRP yet, but I have played the tabletop battles stuff before, so
yeah,
I'm at least familiar with that.
Haven't we all?
Yes, we've all fallen victim to that at some point in our lives. I in fact have a huge pile of zombies that I should be putting together at some point.
I was at the local game store here just a couple of days ago, and the guys are all talking about Death Watch, and they know me, so they're like, "Oh yeah, Dark Heresy." They're asking me about Death Watch and comparing the two, and we were talking a little bit. And what had just come in though, that they were like, "Oh, come look at this!" Yes, they busted out the new Dark Eldar. The new Dark Eldar Codex and all the new Dark Eldar minis, and everybody was oohing and aahing about the awesome new Dark Eldar stuff.
Nice.
Flipping the new Codex. Yeah, those guys, man, they put crack in the plastic.
Yes, yes, they do. Believe me, I know.
Yeah. Honestly, I played for, I had every Codex under the sun and played for years, and eventually it just got so expensive. I know there are arguments about expense versus the time and the entertainment you get. I just don't care. I stopped buying all of them. I look occasionally, but I just had to walk away because I spent so much money.
Very cool, very cool. Well, you also did some work, it looks like some design work on the Red Star campaign setting for Green Ronin. So how did you...
My history laid bare. That was a good one. Me and Ian did that one, and we worked pretty closely with Christian Gossett, the creator of the Red Star, and after we created all this stuff, we wrote a lot of stuff that was new that he hadn't really thought about. We pushed Goss quite a bit to come up with stuff, and in turn, we gave him all these ideas that he used, and now stuff that Ian and I came up with, insofar as Goss is concerned, that's official Red Star stuff. Like, he looks at the source book now when he works on the comic every once in a while.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I'm still in contact with him. So he's put out the last part of Sword of the line for Sword of Lies here. So yeah, that was a really fun project. Oh yeah, I did the Nocturnals too with Dan Brereton, who I just met in the flesh for the first time just a couple of months ago here.
Very nice.
So yeah, there's that's the miscellaneous era. I was working on all kinds of stuff. But working on those projects is part of the reason why Primus tapped me to help him do Dragon Age.
Right, right. I want to get to that here in a minute.
Okay.
Because obviously that's the big thing right now.
Yeah, that's the big one.
Yes, yes. And we've talked to Chris and talked to a few people about that. So because it sounds like you've had a lot of good experience, or a lot of experience anyway, working with licensed products. Have you noticed any kind of a different do you have to put yourself into a different mode when you're working on a licensed product versus a more of an original work, like, you know, like Skull and Bones or anything like that?
Absolutely, it's almost a completely different environment. One of the biggest differences, I guess I'm going to go with two. Two of the biggest differences. You can't make sweeping statements when you work on a licensed product, right? It's always very specific. Dark Heresy was a really good example. They, you know, we pretty much went the Dan Abnett route. For anybody that's a 40K fan, they'll know. They give Dan his own area, you know, which they internally call the Abnett universe, apparently. Because Dan had done enough stuff that they're like, you know what, this area will be yours to play with, Dan. And you can call anything in that area definitive. And for anybody that doesn't know, Dan Abnett's a big 40K author,
right,
for Games Workshop. So Dan took over this area, and he made it his own, and he's created this whole set of stuff that are all within his world. Mm-hmm. And they let Dan say pretty much whatever he wants about his area. And that was us, and now FFG with the Calixus sector. It was ours to say what was definitive in the Calixus sector.
Right.
And while you could always make a statement about the Calixus sector, you could never make a general one. So you could say, the hive worlds of the Calixus are like this.
Right.
But you couldn't say, all hive worlds everywhere in the Imperium are like this.
Mm-hmm.
That was unacceptable. And Games Workshop is fiercely protective of their IP.
Right.
Originally, there was all these references that we had that we thought would be cool. The Necromunda, that absolutely not. That's separate IP. It's like, it's Necromunda. It's like Hive World. But nope. Necromunda is its own thing. So you couldn't have direct references to other things. So the licensed product, the other thing that you really get into is how much a licensee understands what a role-playing game is, understands what you want to do with it. And that can range most optimal is know exactly what an RPG is and trust you to do whatever you want. Which part?
basically from when I asked my question on.
Okay. Okay, so your question was a licensed product, right?
Yes.
Or we launched into that part. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, licensed product is really, it's a tricky thing because you really have to deal with the licensor far more so than other products. Mm-hmm. And the big things that you really get into is how sweeping of a statement that you can make. You can make very specific statements, and that was, as an example, is really big with Games Workshop and the Calixis sector. We could say, this is so in the Calixis sector. But saying, this is so in all Hive worlds everywhere in the Imperium is completely unacceptable. You can make very specific statements for a lot of licensors, but you can't go too far. So you're always sitting there trying to add, you know, you want to put your own spin, you want to add your own interesting stuff, but you really got to think about it and construct it so that it fits in with the way the licensor regards their IP.
Right.
So it isn't, it doesn't have that wild flight of creativity when you're doing your own thing. You can't just go, okay, I'm going to make this stuff up and blatantly throw it out there.
Right.
Because they're always going to filter it through what they expect the license to be. And the tricky thing is you're always dealing with a licensor's expectation. So either they have a really good idea what a pen and paper game is,
right,
and they're either willing to let you do whatever you want, or they want you to run a certain course, or they have no idea what a pen and paper RPG is, but they're willing to let you run or maybe not. So it's a range, and it varies by the license. I would say Games Workshop is very protective of their IP, somewhat famous or infamously so,
right,
but we're willing to let us go, and that's part of why they really kind of clipped off and said, okay, you get the Calixis sector to play with, you get you know, this area to play with, because that way there's a lot less of those problems. And that's been true of a couple of different products that I've worked on. They're like, okay, well, you have this area or this thing, and you know, go to town over there.
Now, do you find, did you find as far as working with other people's IP that there is a, that there's something that you like better as far as working with someone else's intellectual property or working with your own thing, or is it entirely something, two different modes of thought for you?
I think that it's actually working with other people on another product is always interesting. You find that there are people that you click with really well, and you can feed off on one another, and you go, okay, we can do this. How about this? And you feed back and forth. And the ubiquity of modern communications makes that really easy now. It's pretty fun that you can send any emails back and forth, or, you know, whatever you're doing, you can kind of throw ideas back and forth and shape something that's really interesting. Whereas if you're just kind of doing it on your own, you're always assembling and going, well, I hope they like this. So you're slowly strapping it together and occasionally adding things. Yeah, licensed products tend to have this period that you won't get with other things, that after you send them back, there's always a 3 to 4 weeks, sometimes 6 to 8 weeks, waiting period for the licensee to get back to you, or the licensor to get back to you as the licensee, and then say, oh, yeah, we were pleased with it, or, well, we really need you to change these things.
Right.
This didn't work for us, and we need you to change it. So that's always a tricky thing with working in a licensed product. It's not all bad if you're just kind of, you're compensated for it, and you know that's the way it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it is their thing. You know, you're getting to play in somebody else's sandbox, so.
Excellent. Now, is there a sandbox out there that you haven't played in that you'd like to play in at some point?
Let's see. All right, well, one of the biggest things for me really was Warhammer was just kind of a dream come true. I was a massive fan of the Warhammer line for years, so that was a real big one to get to run around and do my own thing. Actually, of licensed products, I'm pretty much done. I have, at this point, done most of the ones. I mean, it's not to say that somebody couldn't come along and come up with one that I thought, oh, that might be fun. But most of the ones that I've seen over the years, I've worked on the greater bulk of them at one level or another. I'm sitting here racking my brains. I would really like, they claim that they're going to do it. It would be fun as hell to do Girl Genius, actually. That would be a blast. But the Fuglio swear that they're going to have a GURPS source book for Girl Genius any day now. So that would actually be an absolute blast to work on, but they swear they're going to do it, so that would
we
be fun.
We have a theory here at the Gamers Haven, as far as GURPS is considered, that eventually either fallout from the Hadron Collider or something like that is they're going to split open an atom someday and a GURPS book is going to fall out and be like, well, there you go.
Look, it's arrived. Yeah, exactly.
There's a GURPS book for everything.
Yeah, they're definitely they throw it out there for sure. Actually, I got one more, and then I'll limit it myself to two. You heard of Atomic Robo?
Yes.
Okay, Atomic Robo is the bomb, and doing an Atomic Robo source book for Spirit of the Century would be utterly appropriate. That would work really well. Spirit of the Century and Atomic Robo go together. Peanut butter and chocolate. That pair would work out really well. So yeah, that would be a fun book to do.
Well, speaking of peanut butter and chocolate and things going really well together, Green Ronin put out the Dragon Age RPG this year to much fanfare and much quite a bit of excitement. In fact, several any nods here and there as far as nominations and whatnot. How did you get involved in working on the project, and really, what have you done with the Dragon Age pen and paper side?
Okay, so first off, I have to point out, yeah, excitement now, because that is part of the story. When Chris Paramus announced that he was doing Dragon Age, there was kind of a resonating thud in the gaming world. People were like, what? Okay. Why is this news? Like, I mean, I'm not going to hold people too much. It was 4 or 5 months before the actual video game release for Dragon Age Origins. So people are like, what is Dragon Age? Why should we be excited about this?
I'll confess, you know, I was one of those people, because I hadn't heard of Dragon Age at all.
Well, you know, and it's not anybody's fault, per se. And retrospect, hindsight's eagle-eyed in 2020, right? Everybody looks back at it. Okay, Primus is a genius. You know? Chris is like, well, let me see. I played the heck out of Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh, yeah.
Baldur's Gate, Spiritual Successor. This is like, this is not rocket science. This game's going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Chris, it was certainly a calculated gamble, but I don't think it was an overwhelming gamble. And on top of that, it was actually BioWare that approached Chris.
Yeah,
he was at the conference, and the guys from BioWare, they approached Paramus and said, hey, we love you guys. We love pen and paper. All of the people at BioWare, the writers, David Gator, Mary Kirby, all of them, they're all pen and paper geeks, every one of them.
That's awesome.
And they were so excited about having a pen and paper version. They're like, well, heck, we're not writing it. We need somebody to do it. And for ages, they'd want, you know, Chris is in the right spot, and they approached him and said, hey, we'd like to do this, and Primus, it's like, heck yeah. So how I got involved, I'd finished a couple other projects, and I was laying low there for a while. I'd finished a bunch of stuff, and I had like a couple, I try to recharge my batteries in between big projects. I'll take a couple months and play a bunch of video games and play Fallout, you know. Looking forward to New Vegas here. So I'll do that stuff in between bouts, and I was about ready to hop back on the freelancing horse. Chris sent me, and then he said, hey, you want to work on this this fantasy project with me? It'll be pretty big. I think it'll be awesome. And I was like, okay. And he's like, well, I got an NDA, but it's really cool. And I'm like, sure, hit me. So So he sent me the initial for Dragon Age, and you shouldn't feel bad because I hadn't heard of it either at the time. I mean, I knew who BioWare and all that stuff was, but I was like, I didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
So he sent me the first links, and I went on like, oh, the Knights of the Old Republic guys, yeah. I went, and this was, you know, months before the public announcement. So I kind of went into the computer and looked up all the stuff they had released so far and some of their early screenshots, and
right.
Like, wow, this looks kind of fun. I got the stuff, and he pulled me in and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. So you in? And I said, heck yeah, it looks like fun. So I was sent this huge, huge document with all this designer stuff, notes, pictures, all kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
And you got to understand, I, like you guys, I'm a fan of Dragon Age Origins, but man, I rode the spoiler train to the spoiler town and drank the spoiler frickin' beer in those documents they sent me. I knew everything. When people were screaming on the forums, like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going on? I knew all the secrets way in advance. It was painful. Painful. So that whole early initial part was pretty tough on me, knowing, like, I knew where the Darkspawn came from, like, early on. I'm like, oh, gnarly. So a lot of that stuff was, I was spoiled on early. But it all led to what we did. And they made a couple of weird changes from their initial design documents that I've never yet been able to get David or any of those guys in a meeting and ask them, like, what happened. If I run into them at a convention, maybe I will. Because a couple of things, they moved from the initial maps that I've got, like hand-drawn maps of Fur Elven, they moved some stuff around from where it was going to be originally. Like, a couple of the areas, like, leaked across the continent from one spot to another. They shifted some things around in weird ways. Yeah, from the initial design docs. I know some of the changes didn't quite make sense, but, like, Red Cliff, I'll give you guys one. I don't think this would cause any troubles. Red Cliff and the West Hills, if you played it, for anybody that's played Dragon Age Origins,
yeah,
Red Cliff is down in the...
I have played it extensively now, so...
Exactly. So, and, you know, Red Cliff down in the south, and it's, you know, this huge red cliff there, down at the end of Lake Callanhad, the southern end of Lake Callanhad, where...
Go for it.
So, okay. So, well, what they did was they had all their areas set up, and they made the decision to move some of the stuff around. Red Cliff, in the game as it is south of Lake Callanhad. It's like the cliffs to the south of Lake Callanhad.
Right.
And West Hills are up kind of northwest up against the Waking Sea. But Red Cliff was actually the cliffs of Fur Elden overlooking the Waking Sea, and it was the northmost territory, whereas the West Hills were west and south of Lake Callanhad.
Right.
So after the game came out, I was kind of expecting things to, when I'm like, oh, I'll go to Red, hey, wait a minute, that's not where it's supposed to be. So... their initial design stuff, they moved some things in strange ways and not in ways that I could discern exactly why that decision was made, but I'm certain BioWare made tens of thousands of decisions for how to do stuff or present things or, you know. So I can't tell you this though, because I've seen smack on the forums. Always they knew the Qunari had horns. That's why the ogres had the big old horns from the beginning. That is because now people are talking smack about DA2, like, oh, it's just a retcon that Sten didn't have horns. I can tell you guys in the initial design documents, Sten was specifically a Qunari without horns. That's actually, they knew that from the beginning.
Nice.
So that isn't BS that they suddenly whipped out here late in the day. That's actually true.
It was all planned ahead of time.
It was planned. And I can only point you guys to the design of the ogres and those huge old horns. And go, obviously, they had it in mind.
Right.
Even though, you know, they did think about it, and it was in the design. Now, it might have been that they felt like they couldn't render them on Sten or something. I don't know. But I can tell you that they definitely intended for the Qunari to eventually have horns. That was the plan all along.
How did stuff like that impact you guys while you were developing the pen and paper RPG?
Well, unfortunately, it really leads... I mean, the obvious answer is, if you look at Dragon Age, set one, the first box, and I'm really glad that it's gone over so well. I did a bunch of work, and Bruce did phenomenal amounts of work to make that as good as he did. I've done a ton of the lore and put it together.
It was a big hit at CantCon. We ran there were two sessions run at CantCon this year, and it was big hit. I had a lot of fun in it.
It's really fun how fast it can suck people in. And the stunts, I'm glad it's gone over so well. But if you look at the first box set, and especially if anybody that's played the video game, you go, wow, the equipment's pretty limited. I mean, you can see the equipment's kind of limited. A lot of the descriptions of things are pretty straightforward. We didn't have the final equipment lists when set one was being written. Yeah, we didn't see any of the stuff that you guys did. The final equipment that eventually came out for Dragon Age Origins, we hardly saw any of that stuff. We knew what the monetary system was going to be. Fortunately, they went with the copper, silver sovereigns, copper, silver, gold. And we knew some of that stuff, but the actual final items, we knew very few of them. We had, a sparse listing of what they were going to be. Mm-hmm. So, fortunately, we really actually are rectifying that in set two. For everybody that didn't know, you can download set two, a big chunk of the rules of set two, mm-hmm. for free from Green Ronin right now. They're doing an open world beta test, and anybody that wants to can check it out. What you guys haven't seen yet, there's a bunch more equipment that hasn't been made publicly available, there's rules for poison and traps, a couple other things, and how we're going to interpret them for the pen and paper. Those haven't been made publicly available yet. But they do exist, and they will eventually come out. And one of the I actually had some people email me about it, so this is as good a forum as any. There's a whole bunch of stuff about the Green Ronin and Orzammar that isn't in that public set that we gave everybody. That's the rules. That is not the entirety of set two. There's a lot more flesh that isn't in there. That's just the greater bulk of the rules for set two. Right. But there are some things that are not... you don't put out the entire product for free if there's a couple of... there are some other things that are not in there. So mostly writing and background stuff, but I know you gamers and everybody loves the writing and background stuff, so there's big chunks about some secret history about the Grey Wardens and stuff that isn't yet publicly known. So what happened to the Griffins actually is in there. Various other stuff like that is in there.
So you guys work closely with BioWare as far as filling in gaps like that? I mean, is that stuff... It sounds like that stuff that they've figured out already and that they're telling you... Or they're giving you guys the okay to reveal through the game.
Well, one of the things that... They gave us really nice design documents. Like, David Gator wrote big design documents on stuff on the different areas. Uh-huh. But it's kind of a... Something William Gibson once said about his own work. It's a mile wide and an inch deep.
Right.
They sketched out huge areas, and they had an idea of what was happening there, but they did very finite details. They just go, well, we kind of know this is there, and we kind of know that's there, and here's the documents for that.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, they've been really supportive, and we, even very early on, Premis and I were telling them, we're going to have to expand on this stuff. You guys know this. And you asked me about licensors. They've been awesome because they know a pen and paper game needs details.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been really cool about, yep, you guys can expand on this stuff. Don't go hog wild. Keep it true to the spirit of Dragon Age, and we'll run over all of it. But so far, you guys are doing great.
Sure.
So they've let us make up stuff and kind of throw it out there, and all of it has, so far, gone over pretty well.
Very cool. Very cool. So I think the next thing due out currently is, now I don't think it's actually out yet, is in physical form. I think it's Blood and Ferelden.
Yes, Blood and Ferelden. The PDF's out, mm-hmm. and the physical, let's see, Chris got the printer proofs late September and went through them, which means, and they were all groovy, that means it actually should be out in physical form, you're right, within the next couple of weeks here.
Very cool.
Yeah, that was a neat project to work on. I wrote an adventure for that one called Where Eagles Lair about the Avars,
mm-hmm.
the mountain people, the Frostbacks.
Well, for the benefit of our listeners, what exactly is Blood and Ferelden?
Oh, okay. Good point. You all don't know? Blood and Ferelden is a trilogy of adventures set in different parts of Ferelden for the Dragon Age RPG.
Right.
They're all between levels 1 through 5. So there's three complete adventures, and then there's three things that we call adventure seeds. Mm-hmm. And that an adventure seed is a 2,000 to 3,000 word write-up describing what a thing is, what's going on, some of the players, how you could do it or run it, but then kind of leaves an individual GM on their own to fill in the rest of the details. So it's a super-sized plot hook, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it fills in, you know, gives you all kinds of ideas like, hey, you could do this, you could do that. And a lot of people have responded well to them because they like the fact that there's three whole adventures as well as adventure seats. So
right.
They're looking forward to seeing the reception when it comes out in print. Because a lot of people, if it's not in print, it doesn't exist. But the people that have read the PDF so far pretty much have good things to say about it across the board. Everybody's been saying they've enjoyed it. So that's pretty cool.
Is there an aspect of Dragon Age that you've really enjoyed working on?
I think the neatest thing about Dragon Age is it's kind of gone back to that simple fantasy I guess it would be strange for some of the audience. They're like, hey, I've been doing that fantasy for ages. I've done a lot of unusual products. I've done, you know, the full range of different things set at different places.
Sure.
And believe it or not, for me, this has kind of been a kind of old school dark fantasy. It's
right.
been fun because almost everything I've done is variations. You know, Warhammer is really dark.
Uh-huh.
You know, so a lot of the things that I've worked on are not nearly. I mean, the blight's pretty bad news. The darkness in Dragon Age is definitely as much the darkness in men's hearts. I like that we've emphasized in what we've done choices that actually matter, making people make choices, but not ones that are designed to just screw you. Like, you know, you didn't know this, and now you've done some terribly evil thing. It's just, you know, both choices are equally, look, you just got to pitch your way and make the best of it. And we've tried to put that throughout the adventures, too. There's a number of times, it doesn't do gotcha moments so much as, like, look, you got to make the choice here. Do you want to help these guys? Do you want to help these guys? You can't help both. You're not going to be screwed for not helping one side or the other. It's just a choice. And we really tried to thread that through the adventures because that was very much like the Dragon Age Origins video game. That's something that runs throughout that game. Like you just make choices. You know, they don't always come back to hurt you. They're just choice.
Right. Very cool. Very cool. Looking at... Moving past this, obviously, the Dragon Age set 2 is currently in the open. You said it's an open beta, basically.
It's open beta. I believe they're calling it.
Mm-hmm. And you can go to the Green Ronin website, greenronin.com, and download the PDF of the rules. And it's some very basic stuff. So.
Right, and it's got a lot of neat stuff. Like, if you've played Dragon Age, if you've got set one already, the neat thing is it's got a couple more combat stunts. But then on top of the combat stunts, and the stunt system is obviously one of the big things behind the, you know, the age system that everybody likes.
Uh-huh.
But there's social stunts and exploratory stunts
mm-hmm.
that are added in, too. So that's pretty cool for... You'd have to check out, it's a lot to describe in a podcast, but there's a whole set of rules for if you stunt while you're doing social interaction now, you get cool stuff like, you know, wee boom woot, and then you need to say something stunning so everybody stands around staring at you like, wow, that was hardcore.
It's like, whoa,
so, you get to do social stunts, which is pretty neat. So there's some really cool rules in there, added stuff, and obviously there's a ton more backgrounds and, you know, the beginning, because I wrote this huge section on Orzammar. The section on Orzammar is not in there, but you get to see that there is such a section because there's the different castes of dwarves are listed in the new backgrounds. So you can play an uppercase or lowercase dwarf or a, you know, duster the ones with absolutely no case,
right.
Booted and exiled and thieves and whatnot, which is one of the potential starting stories, actually, of the origin.
Uh-huh.
But it's all available for player characters now for the pen and paper game, and that's all in the free download for the second set. Now, the actual print download for the second set, last I heard from Green Ronin, it was still targeted for Christmas. And not just for Christmas. So hopefully that schedule will stay on and everybody will be able to see the big, pretty box set. Sure. I can tell you, box set's going to be, it's supposed to be the same price as the first one, but it's likely to be quite a few more pages long.
Very nice.
We stuffed that one full. Yeah. We are so over on the word count. Everybody that worked on it's over on their word count. Yeah, the actual people that worked on set two, it's I know you were doing a bunch of mutants and mastermind stuff, so it's Steve Kenson, actually. It's Steve Kenson,
oh, nice.
Myself, Jeff Tidball, and Chris Pramus. And Tidball is the Lion developer now. Chris is actually going to go, if you hadn't heard, Chris is going to go work on the 40K MMO.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, Chris is moving to Austin. Actually, Pramus is headed down there to Austin to work with Relic on the big, big 40K MMO, Dark Millennium. So Chris is going to be, not that he'll still have his hand in things, but Jeff Tidball was brought in to be line developer for Dragon Age.
Very nice. Very nice. I know Jeff. Jeff's a great guy.
Yeah, Jeff's awesome. Jeff's if your audience knows, Jeff is awesome.
He was one of our very first guests on the Gamers Haven, actually, many years ago.
Oh, cool. Hey, Jeff is a freelancer's freelancer. He did he's a line developer for Feng Shui, which is just one of my all-time favorite games.
Oh, yeah.
He did Aces. What's the game he did with the coins? Pieces of Eight for Atlas with Jeff's design. And yeah, he's awesome. He's done a lot of really cool stuff. He's working, him and Will Hindmarch are working on a Trail of Cthulhu campaign called Eternal Lies, which they want to be the spiritual successor to Masks of Nyarlathotep.
Oh, nice.
And I think it's going to be awesome. The little that I've seen and what I know, I think that's going to be fantastic. So, you know, I'm throwing out pitches for friends of mine, but
sure.
I think it's going to be really cool. So.
Well, how about you throw some pitches out for yourself? What have you got on the burner right now?
Oh, big pitch for myself. Okay, so the aforementioned Gareth Michael Skarkin and myself. Some people have already heard about it, and it is we can't show you much yet, but we are doing the epic mashup Far West. The website placeholder right now, it's www.intothefarwest.com. It is a mashup between Western, spaghetti Westerns, Wuxia, hardcore Wuxia martial arts, and
very
steampunk.
Cool. Awesome.
It is a West that never was, and it's not an alternate version of our world. It's another world entirely.
Right.
But it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a transmedia property that takes from some very cool stuff and puts it together in pretty wild ways, because a lot of the history of the Wuxia cinema, both the cinema and the books, the writing, the original tales of the martial arts, have a lot of similarities with the classic Western myths. There are a lot of amazing similarities between the two, and where the two have kind of blended and overlaid, Gareth and I are dancing with lightning fast steps to blend the two and make something really interesting. Gareth had this huge idea, and it's going to be wide and sweeping and crazy, and he's pulled me into it. So I'm very much looking forward to unleashing that on everyone.
Very cool. I look forward to talking to Gareth about that in the future, actually. I plan to get him on the show soon. So I am certain
he will be happy to it. Whatever he's capable of telling you publicly at that point, he will certainly be willing to rap about it, because he's very excited too.
Do you have anything else on the burner you'd like to talk about before we go to the last set of questions I have?
Let's see. Most of the other stuff I can't talk about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I have stuff that's at that stage of, I can't talk about it publicly.
No problem. Let me sort of work into my last couple of questions here. Let's see. Already got that one. What is really the one thing that Gamers Haven is sort of all about is spreading the love of the hobby. It's one of the reasons we started up the CantCon game convention out here in Kansas City. It's to just basically share that this hobby is really cool and more people should get into it and whatnot. And I'm curious as to what your personal opinion is on why you love the hobby. What is it that keeps you coming back and rolling those dice all the time?
I think one of the things that I really like about it is the fact that it does let you, I mean, we tend to compartmentalize our lives these days and they get pretty hectic, mm-hmm. and people don't unwind enough. You know, we don't really get out of ourselves, and it's a really good de-stressor. And I don't mean just like, you know, dungeon crawling and slaughtering things. It's kind of fun to get out of your own skin. and really, this hobby lets you do that like nothing else. I have friends that, I mean, not to get too heavy, I have friends whose lives were saved by gaming. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, they worked through serious trauma by gaming to actually get rid of real-world trauma. Yeah, they played games because they were things that were so painful that they really couldn't do them. And I have friends that were spared and said they were spared suicide or a number of things because they had this hobby to de-stress them. I mean, that's kind of at the heaviest end of things. At the lighter end, it's just a lot of fun. My kids are now hitting the age where I can do stuff with them, and that's just been a blast. You know, they're old enough that I can run stuff at them and they can, you know, try things. That's been really cool, too.
Excellent. Well, the last question I've got is just a general question. When was the last time you got to sit down and roll some dice, play a game, and what was it?
Well, I literally just played board games. I literally just played Small World with my daughter, like, a couple of days ago.
That's a good one.
So on the board game side, which with the kids, I literally just did that a couple of days ago. Uh-huh. I have been working on Dragon Age for all of you guys, but the last time I actually got to roll dice with everybody, I was actually playing Mutants Masterminds 3E right after Gen Con. Nice. I played a friend of mine took his DC handbook back, and we were playing just after Gen Con, so I've been squirreling myself away and not playing in my regular game because I was working seriously on finishing a project. I dragged myself away. I have a campaign that I'd ran for, it ran for like 2 years here, mm-hmm. that ended not too long ago, which is Mutants of Mass second edition that just came to a conclusion here. So.
Yeah, we just managed to finish up our Deadlands campaign, is what we were playing before we just started up the Mutants and Masterminds thing, and it was a campaign that had been going on and off for about 6 years. So.
Oh, that's, wow, that is 6 years. That's a good run.
Oh, yeah.
That is a very good run. I'm actually, I guess I could say, not that I'd ever plug WotC too hard, but Gamma World just came out here, and I'm a huge old-school Gamma World fan. I've got Metamorphosis Alpha and all my beta, you know, all my old mutant stuff for Gamma World sits on my shelf in as pristine as it could be, and so I'm super stoked about checking out the new one. I'm not super keen on the 4E rules, but the fact that they say it's a light version of the rules and it's a lot of fun, and my friend Rob Schwab, who is one of the big guys behind Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, he was the lead developer for Wolfrup second. Rob's a really good guy. Rob wrote a bunch of the stuff for Gamma World. So him and Rick Baker and whatnot. So.
I know Steve Kenson is really loves it too. Loves Gamma World quite a bit. He never got to work in it.
Steve, the night at Gen Con, we had this big green running dinner because it was a good con for everybody. And Steve came up just slightly late because he was at an introductory game for Gamma World. He comes right enough. And they were like, Rat Horde. His individual character was a rat horde. You know? Like, it was a good game. He's like, this game is awesome.
Nice.
So we were all like, okay, that does sound pretty fun. And Rob's sitting there grinning. You know, 'cause Rob was at the dinner too, so he's like, oh yeah, good stuff.
Very Very nice, very nice. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time out to talk to us here at the Gamers Haven. It's it took us a couple tries to get you on the show, but
yeah,
intervening.
Charm, right?
But hey, we're glad to finally get you on the show, and thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I will see you next time around.
All right, great.
You paying attention now?
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. Hey, we do know what we're talking about. You know, we called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right. Fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles.
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right. Fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games.
But don't forget that we talk about, you know, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gaming, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure, sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Hey, Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay, who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
I guess we don't know what we're talking about.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
That's not canon.